Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Vicki Barker. House Republicans will support Ukraine's battle against Russian invaders, but only if the U.S. also toughens up security at America's borders. House Speaker Mike Johnson on CBS's Face the Nation telling moderator Margaret Brennan,
"We must secure the U.S. border before we secure anyone else's."
You think you can get all this done by February?
I think if the White House and the Senate are serious about this and they listen to the American people, remembering this is an 80% issue with the American people, they understand the necessity of what we're talking about. We have to insist upon securing our own country.
The first winter storm of 2024 has slammed into the nation's northeast. A nightmare for travelers, a winter wonderland for kids.
This is like a once-year thing. I just like walking around, exploring.
Here's forecaster David Roth.
There was heavy snow in western Maryland, interior portions of Pennsylvania. New York City got some snow, but apparently didn't stick very well, so really not much accumulated. But a little to the north of the city, they got decent snows. The last reports we had, it was at least a swath of 4 to 8 inches.
And more winter weather's forecast for the nation's west and south. Air safety regulators confirming all Boeing MAX 9 jets will remain grounded pending inspections. This after Friday's incident on an Alaska Airlines flight when a door blew off soon after takeoff. No serious injuries among the 177 on board. To the Middle East now, and in the West Bank city of Jenin. A family buries four sons among seven people reported killed in an Israeli helicopter strike. The Israeli military says it was responding to explosives being thrown at its vehicles. In Gaza, Al Jazeera reports the son of its Gaza bureau chief was among those killed in an airstrike there. This, as Secretary of State Antony Blinken continues his latest Middle East trip. CBS's Linda Gradstein has that.
Arriving in Jordan, Secretary Blinken said that accepting a ceasefire now would leave Hamas in power in Gaza. But he called on Israel to do more to lessen the civilian death toll in Gaza, which the Palestinian Health Ministry says is over 22,000 people.
Protecting civilians will help prevent Hamas from further exploiting the situation. But most important, it's simply the right and moral thing to do.
Blinken arrives in Israel tomorrow.
And when celebrities arrive at the Golden Globes in Hollywood tonight,
they'll be treated to a $500,000 swag bag, the most expensive in award show history. The goodies include trips to some of the world's best hotels, bespoke sneakers, a session with a celebrity tattoo artist, and a rare watch.
CBS's Danya Bakis on the record-breaking swag at tonight's awards. They air on CBS at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Voting. It's not only good for democracy, one of the nation's biggest medical associations says it's also good for your health. Catherine Carley explains.
The American College of Physicians says voting empowers people to engage with their community, while ballot initiatives and elected officials determine just how well the healthcare system works. So ACP President Omar Atik says voters ultimately determine people's access to healthcare services and physicians' ability to treat them.
If there is more voter participation, there will be better healthcare policies and therefore better healthcare.
Atik says research shows states with fewer barriers to voting have better health outcomes than states with restrictive voting laws or gerrymandered maps. The ACP is encouraging all healthcare professionals and medical students to engage patients in nonpartisan healthcare-related conversations about voting as a way to increase health equity. Atik says even posting voter registration information in patient waiting rooms is a good place to start.
We are looking at talking to patients about the importance of their voice in making sure that the national resources are allocated to where we have optimal health for everyone.
Atik says despite being one of the richest and most technically advanced nations in the world, the U.S. ranks lowest in life expectancy for both men and women among comparable countries. He says physicians have a responsibility to help their patients when they need it, and talking about voting on issues that improve health care is part of that help. I'm Catherine Carley. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds for today. Light winds and highs in the upper 30s. Close to the 30-degree mark for lows overnight. We'll keep those mostly cloudy skies. Even more clouds on the way Monday. Highs in the afternoon in the upper 30s with a rain-snow mix possible Monday night into Tuesday. Right now it's 28.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and I am delighted to have you with me on our Saturday morning broadcast. It is our first broadcast of the new calendar year 2024, and it is Saturday, January 6th of this new calendar year. This is our 79th broadcast since going on the air way back in June of 2022, and I have been honored and delighted to have you among my audience members listening, perhaps not every Saturday, but many Saturdays, as we engage in our collective discussion of all things related to law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. This morning, as always, coming to you from the wonderful studios of Civic Media, located in downtown Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout stations throughout our great state of Wisconsin, always inviting you to be a part of our discussion. For those of you who are new to our Saturday morning broadcast, we focus every single weekend for 2 hours on the significant news of the past week, sometimes the past days beyond just the past week. And we focus on those through a lens of rule of law and justice and government, frankly, often focusing upon my former employer, the Department of Justice, and the trappings of how the administration of justice is pursued in our nation, in our state, and even locally. As a part of that, it is incredibly important to me, to the integrity of our broadcast, that we hear from you. And so this morning, as in every morning, I invite you to call in to join me and my wonderful producer, Anya, also joined this morning by co-producer Johnny, at 844-967-2789. Together, we are taking your phone calls, focusing specifically upon your inquiries, your questions about civics, the things that we talk about, again, through the rule of law lens, the current events of the past days in America, in our world, understanding those through that particular lens, inviting you to be part of our discussion this morning, as is the case every Saturday morning. Also, inviting you to go on the Civic Media app, the website, find your particular broadcast station, identify that, and send us a note, send us a question or a comment, and I will take those as well. Again, delighted to have you with me for this first program, our first broadcast of calendar year 2024. It goes without saying that we are convening this morning here in the state of Wisconsin on January 6th of 2024. It is the third year anniversary of the horrific attack upon the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C., and upon the process by which we select our principal chief executive in this nation, the President of the United States of America. You all recall the events of those days. It is one of those days. It has become one of those days in our nation's history that those of us who lived through it will always remember where we were, when we witnessed for the first time the attack, the insurrection, the attempt to undermine our Constitution, the basic trappings of how we do government in America. Where were you at that particular time? 3 years ago today. I recall very well where I was, coming out of a court proceeding and watching in disbelief, not quite certain what I was watching initially, but understanding very, very quickly, as did all of you too, that our nation, quite literally, the very basic understandings about how we do government were under attack on that day. This morning, we're going to be giving some thoughts on that particular event of 3 years ago, and then also as a part of our initiation of our first broadcast here in 2024, going to be looking at the calendar. What has derived since that time in terms of litigation, government, rule of law, justice, prosecution, criminal and civil? We're going to be talking this morning about what we can expect in the weeks and the months, perhaps even the years ahead, when it comes to all the things that are happening in the wake of the attack upon our government and the ways in which we do government 3 years ago today. We invite you to join us for that discussion, specifically encouraging once again your questions and your inquiries about things that are on our aggressive but achievable syllabus. As always, we ask three important questions, and we will do that again this morning. We ask, what happened? What do we know? What are the facts? What is out there to be digested and understood? Why are those things important? Why are they relevant, material, or significant to our understanding of the world in which we live? And in many cases, especially this morning, what do we do about those things? What can we undertake in terms of advocacy as responsible citizens in our nation and in our state? How should we respond? Not describing how each of us should understand and interpret and know these facts, but what should we do if we are inclined to act? What are our options out there for responsible civic engagement? All those things we ask as a part of our discussion, our broadcast on Saturday morning, as a part of our Civilists this morning, chatting specifically about January 6th, and then talking about the many pieces of litigation going forward in our trial, our appellate, and yes, indeed, our United States Supreme Court, where we're going to begin this morning. Along the way, as at the top of our second hour, we're also going to go overseas to do a little bit of commentary here on January 6th about things going on in two nations overseas, also in the category of rule of law, justice, the delivery of justice for people in foreign nations, and also for us, pulling from those particular news stories some understandings about how we can best understand what is going on in our own nation, inviting you once again to be a part of our discussion. We know once again that yesterday, President of the United States of America, Joseph Biden, gave a speech, and it was undeniably, to be clear and to be transparent about it, it was a campaign speech. He appeared in Valley Forge in Pennsylvania and talked about, obviously, his campaign and the reason for his running for the presidency. Along the way, he did comment centrally about January 6th, and it is important to understand what he said yesterday, not in a political or partisan viewpoint, but rather to understand why it is important to understand what happened on January 6th. Specifically, he said this. He said, today, we're here to answer the most important of questions. He said, is democracy still America's sacred cause? And that indeed is the question that's going to be animating us this morning. And I would anticipate throughout the weeks, months, and probably years ahead on this broadcast and other broadcasts of civic media. He went on to say, this is not rhetorical. It's not academic. It's not hypothetical. Again, we can endorse all those notions. He said, whether democracy is still America's sacred cause is the most urgent question of our time. And he went on to say, that's what the elections in 2024, we've got three of them coming up in the state of Wisconsin, four of them coming up in the state of Wisconsin in this calendar year alone. He said, the voices who know about what happened on January 6th understand the significance of this urgent question about America's sacred cause. He also said that there are those people who have abandoned the truth and abandoned democracy. They have made their choice, he said, and the rest of us now, of all political persuasions, need to make our choice. Indeed, an appropriate commission this morning as we think about January 6th and the things going ahead. For the first time in our history, once again, the insurrectionists on January 6th, 3 years ago today, had come to stop the peaceful transfer of power in America. We know that based upon the things that happened on that day, the things we witnessed, the commentary at that time, and the investigative work both on Capitol Hill and by the Department of Justice that has followed in the wake of the attack on our Capitol. What did they do that morning? They smashed windows. They shattered doors. They attacked the police. Outside, gallows on the Capitol Hill were erected as the crowd chanted, "Hang Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States of America." Inside, as the assault on our Capitol went ahead, the people attacking our Capitol hunted for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Over 140 police officers were injured. Five people were killed. And the president and the first lady, of course, attended the funerals of many of those police officers, as did other officials on all sides of the political aisle. Those included memorials of those who died on that day. This was not a peaceful protest. And even though there have been, in the wake of January 6th, in the past 3 years, seeming to take up more steam in recent times, an awful lot of people who would try to recast, redescribed, re-envision what happened on January 6th. The reality is this was not a peaceful protest. It was a violent assault. These were insurrectionists. They're not patriots. They're not people there who were simply looking around as tourists. Physical violence was perpetrated on that day. And as a result of that, not only the deaths, the injuries, the physical damage to our Capitol, All of that produced not only a time of soul searching in America that continues to this day, but also a great series of pieces of litigation, both civil and criminal. We're going to talk about some of that today, including some litigation we haven't chatted a lot about before, which involves one of the fallen police officers that day, a significant news item just this past week, focusing upon what a federal judge did in connection with a civil case going ahead against people who were responsible for January 6th and ultimately the charge in that case, ultimately responsible for the death of this police officer. January 6th, a 3-year anniversary that we observe today, not rewriting history, attempting to identify lessons learned from it, and attempting to hold those who are responsible for it accountable. We know in that category what the statistics are out there. We know what has happened already. There have been significantly numbers of prosecutions by the Department of Justice, all of that as a part of the response by the Department of Justice to this particular event. Approximately 1,200 people now, even more than that, have been prosecuted. Approximately 700 to 800 of those have either pled guilty, gone to trial, been convicted, many others awaiting sentencing still to this time. And yet the investigations go on as late as this past week, continuing to identify the people responsible for the attack upon our Capitol, both mid-level people and lower-level people who were there. And then also, as we know, an awful lot of focus in the 3 years since January 6th on those people responsible for organizing it, for implementing, for calling people to Washington, D.C. for the attack on the Capitol. When we come back after this first break, we're going to chat more about some significant events just this past week having to do with litigation in our state and our federal courts, all that in the wake of January 6th. Stay with us for that important discussion here on our Saturday morning broadcast.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We are back here on our Saturday morning broadcast, again, taking your questions and your inquiries at 844-967-2789 or going on the Civic Media website and sending us your inquiry, your question through that mechanism as well. Talking this morning about all those things that have happened in our nation, in our state, in our local communities in the wake of January 6th, we observe today the three-year anniversary of that horrific event in American history, pulling some understandings, some things we can take away from that, and also doing this morning some inventory about all the cases that are pending as we begin 2024, talking about the calendar and the cases as they are presently docketed by various judges, what's going to happen, frankly, next week and in the weeks and months just ahead. The big news, of course, coming out of hours just of this past Friday, the United States Supreme Court, again in the news, determining just yesterday that it will in fact decide whether former President Donald Trump is eligible for Colorado's Republican primary ballot. Will his name appear on that ballot? And it plainly thrusts the justices once again into a pivotal role that could plainly alter, could affect dramatically this year's presidential election. Now, how did this come about? We have chatted about this in the past. It is important to understand where this case comes from so that we can understand where it is going. You may recall well that a Colorado trial judge conducted a trial. That's right. There was a trial with evidence and witnesses and documents, presentation, testimony about whether or not Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which is this portion of the Constitution, you now all know that well, that prohibits someone who has previously taken an oath of office and committed to serve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, prohibits that person, if they have subsequently engaged in insurrection, prohibits them from occupying any office. And so the Colorado trial judge had that amendment to the Constitution in front of her when she determined that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment did not, in fact, apply to the presidency. That was a key finding that she made a number of weeks ago. But she did, in fact, find that when it comes to understanding what an insurrection is, that Donald Trump had engaged in just that. And that's a significant, important, factual finding that was made in the wake of a trial. Once again, this is not just an individual. This is not just a Secretary of State, an Attorney General, or an independent judge on without any evidentiary basis making this finding. She did this in the wake of the trial, finding an insurrection did, in fact, occur, that Donald Trump was involved not only in that insurrection, responsible for it, presumably, as were others, but finding in the end, as she interpreted Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, that the language of that amendment does not apply to the presidency. It was a head-scratcher at the time, and many people looked at that, including me, and said, gosh, that is not an interpretation that one would normally pull from that constitutional language. Well, I went up to the Colorado Supreme Court, and the court affirmed the key portion of the lower court's ruling, that is that Donald Trump had in fact engaged in insurrection, including by setting out to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election, trying to alter vote counts, encouraging bogus slates of competing electors, the so-called fake electors out there, pressuring the vice president, Mike Pence, to violate the Constitution and calling for the march in the Capitol at the Ellipse and throughout that day. She made that finding at the trial level, at the appellate level, at the Supreme Court level in the Colorado Supreme Court. The court reviewed all of that evidence and issued a compelling, it's lengthy, but it's a compelling statement describing much in much greater language than I have just done right now, the basis for finding that an insurrection existed and that Donald Trump participated in it. affirmed that part of the lower court's ruling separated itself from the related ruling that the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment did not apply. They found, that is, the Colorado Supreme Court found, that indeed it does apply to the presidency, and therefore reversed that part of the decision that said the Section 3 did not apply. The Colorado Supreme Court went on to say this: President Trump asks us to hold, this is the majority writing in their opinion, that Section 3 disqualifies every oath-breaking insurrectionist except the most powerful one, and that it bars oath keepers from virtually every office, both state and federal, except the highest one in the land. Both results, the court went on to say, are inconsistent with that plain language of the history of Section 3. The state Supreme Court, again, addressed the larger issue as well, whether there was an insurrection along the way, and found, based upon the facts presented at the trial, that indeed there was a sufficient evidentiary basis to conclude that an insurrection happened, that Donald Trump participated in it, and therefore that he needs to be removed under the Constitution of the United States of America from this primary ballot in the state of Colorado. That is a huge, very significant decision coming out of the Colorado Supreme Court, the highest court in the state of Colorado. The state Supreme Court did address some other issues as well, and I raise them just because it's important for what may happen next. It said that Congress does not need to act before courts may disqualify the candidates. They said Congress is not the one that necessarily has to be the decision maker in this matter. Said that Donald Trump's eligibility is not the sort of political question that is outside the competence of courts. A lot of focus in recent years by the Supreme Court and other courts, federal and state, about whether or not courts should be involved in partisan political things. The Colorado Supreme Court saying this is not the sort of political question that's outside of our competence to address. The January 6th report was properly admitted into evidence. That a part of the findings of the Colorado Supreme Court as well, reviewing once again what happened at the lower court, at the trial court level, and also finding that Donald Trump's speech outside that day on the Ellipse was not protected by the First Amendment. Made all of these collateral findings as well, again, en route to determining that Donald Trump has to be removed from the Republican primary ballot there in the state of Colorado. That's the significance coming out of Colorado. In the wake of that, Donald Trump's lawyers petitioned the United States Supreme Court for a writ of certiorari. We know from our previous discussions what that is all about. That is the writ that is issued, if at all, in the discretion by the Supreme Court, that says, lower court, send your materials up here. We will review this case once again. We will take a look at whether or not the decisions that you have made at the lower court level are sufficiently supported by the evidence and by the law. We will take this on as a review. The Supreme Court has discretion on whether or not to determine that a case will be reviewed by it. And to this date, to this morning, January 6th, the Supreme Court in this term has decided that in 54 different cases, some of which we've already discussed, many of which we're going to be discussing in the weeks ahead on this broadcast, 54 different cases the Supreme Court has already determined it's going to review in this term. Among them now, the big news coming out of the Supreme Court, Washington, D.C., just yesterday evening, is that the Supreme Court has granted the writ of certiorari in this matter, and it, in fact, will review whether or not the Colorado Supreme Court, its decision is legitimate, whether it's based upon the law, the facts. It has now decided to undertake that case and has scheduled oral argument for February 8th, just about a month from now. When we come back, I'm going to tell you more about the possible consequences of this important decision by the Supreme Court to take on this important case that, again, derives directly from January 6th, third year anniversary today. Join us for that continuing discussion.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News brief, the nation's northeast shivering through its first winter storm of 2024.
The winter storm warnings are still across a decent, like the southeast half of New York outside Long Island. All of southern New England.
Forecaster David Roth, Boston getting 6 to 8 inches of snow. Parts of eastern Massachusetts could get 15 inches. Snow also moving through much of the west. All Boeing MAX 9 jets will remain grounded pending inspections. This after Friday's emergency landing of an Alaska Airlines flight after a door blew out soon after takeoff. The head of the NSTB, Jennifer Homendy, says it could have been much worse had it happened higher.
We could have ended up with something so much more tragic and really fortunate that that did not occur here.
And oh, to be one of the celebrities attending tonight's Golden Globes.
They'll be treated to a $500,000 swag bag, the most expensive in award show history.
CBS's Danya Backus, the Golden Globes air at 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS. CBS News Brief, I'm Vicki Barker.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers win, not the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers paced themselves to an 88-72 win over Nebraska at the Kohl Center. Tyler Wall with 17 points for Wisconsin. They'll take on Ohio State on Wednesday. Another loss on the road for number 7th-ranked Marquette. They lost at Seton Hall, 78-75. The Golden Eagles host Butler Wednesday night. UWM with a win over Detroit Mercy, 84-61. NBA, the Bucks lose again, this time to the Houston Rockets, 112-108. Giannis Antetokounmpo with 48 points, but a bad night for Damian Lillard, who had just 18. Chris Middleton with 10. Milwaukee heading home now after this road trip. They host the Utah Jazz Monday. Giannis asks, how do you deal with losing 3 of your last 4 games?
And you think about it. Now when you go back home and you sleep and you wake up, you think about it. Now when you go back and work out, you think about it. When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds for today. Light winds and highs in the upper 30s. Close to the 30-degree mark for lows overnight. We'll keep those mostly cloudy skies. Even more clouds on the way Monday. Highs in the afternoon in the upper 30s with a rain-snow mix possible Monday night into Tuesday. Right now it's 28.
It's fully leaded education talk. Hard facts with a humorous twist. Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The Foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org. Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The Foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like.
And we are back here in our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you once again for joining me and Anya and Johnny here in the studios of WAUK in Waukesha, but broadcasting throughout the stations here in the state of Wisconsin through Civic Media. Delighted to have you with me once again this morning as we're talking about this major news coming out of the Supreme Court just yesterday, indicating that they have in fact granted certiorari. They will in fact be reviewing this major decision of the Colorado Supreme Court finding that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, that he is subject to the restrictions of the Constitution, keeping him off the primary ballot in Colorado. Now, why is all of this significant? And a few questions about what the Supreme Court could do. Significantly, the Supreme Court could, when it decides to hear the specifics on this, again, argued on February 8th. We will all be turning in to listen to that oral argument live and certainly on the streaming service afterwards, established by John Roberts, our Chief Justice. We can hear the justices as they're hearing argument in these cases, entertaining argument with the litigants before them. February 8th, the Supreme Court is going to be talking with parties on both sides of this issue about what to do, whether or not to overturn the decision by the Colorado Supreme Court or affirm it in some way or something in between. As I said before, the Colorado Supreme Court identified a number of different other issues which it also resolved, and the United States Supreme Court could choose any one of those. It could find that everything about the Colorado Supreme Court decision is accurate and true and based upon the trial record, that the law and the facts do in fact support the decision, the judgment ultimately made that found that Donald Trump needs to be removed from, not on the ballot of the Republican primary there in Colorado. It could do that, and we'll talk about the effects of that kind of a ruling, but could also do all kinds of other things that would enable it not to address that central issue. It could, as I said before in describing what the Colorado Supreme Court has done, it could find that this is not a matter for the federal courts, the Supreme Court itself to undertake, could basically say that we're not going to overturn the decision of Colorado, but we're not going to enter into the fray. We're not going to make a specific finding about what whether the Supreme Court in Colorado, what it did was accurate and right and legal or not. It could also say that the courts are not free to act unless Congress has enacted legislation. That kind of a thing. That presumably would suggest that the Colorado Supreme Court decision needs to be overturned, that if only the Congress can give definition and meaning to the insurrection language in the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, if only the Congress can do that, then the Colorado Supreme Court does not have the authority to do that. The Supreme Court could say that as well. The Supreme Court could simply say, as the trial court judge said, again, overturned by the Colorado Supreme Court, could also say that Section 3 does not apply to the presidency. Again, that's sort of an odd thing, but it could also do that as well. So a number of different options that enable it to dive headlong into the decision about whether or not insurrection took place and whether Donald Trump was responsible for it, or they could go in many other directions. My own prediction is that somehow they will find one of these other avenues not to address this the issue head on. And they will find in the end, through some mechanism, also could attack in some ways the legitimacy of the trial itself, some evidentiary concerns, some process concerns that may also be raised. All of that could result in a decision that either affirms or overturns what's going on in Colorado. My own sense is that the Supreme Court will probably find one of those other avenues, a mechanism to overturn, not to support what the Colorado Supreme Court has done. That's my prediction at this point, but we'll see. And again, one never knows what will happen at the Supreme Court. And it plainly will have a huge impact upon the future of the elective process here in 2024. Now, significantly, the Supreme Court has not narrowed the issues here. It's basically said to the parties, present to us anything that you want. Any of those issues before the Supreme Court that I've just identified, Supreme Court has not narrowed the issue to one or more of those, which it sometimes does in granting writs of certiorari. It did not do that in this case. And so any of these issues can be raised, can be argued,
could be defended by the parties who will be defending the Colorado Supreme Court. In addition, we know as well, and one of the questions that's out there is that if, in fact, the Supreme Court affirms or decides simply not to touch in some way the Colorado Supreme Court decision, then it stands. Then it stands, and it remains one of arguably two states in the nation that have found that Donald Trump should not be on the ballot. The other one, of course, is Maine. We've talked about that before. In that state, a very different process. There you've got the Secretary of State, who under the specific aspects of Maine law has made the determination based upon petitions from citizens there in Maine that indeed there was also an insurrection on January 6th, also making the determination that the section of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, does in fact apply, coming to the same result, but through a very different process. That now the subject of appeals inside the state of Maine, focusing upon whether or not that will stand. But right now, the big one, of course, is Colorado, raises the issue. What happens if indeed the Colorado Supreme Court decision is upheld through a direct or indirect result of the Supreme Court's action, indicated probably coming up sometime very soon, probably not wait, can't wait until June of this year when most of the decisions will be issued. What about the other states out there? We've got many other states that are in various states of flux, some of which have decided to keep him on the ballot, some of which have decided to pursue other mechanisms to address the issue. Some of them have again, initiated actions, whether they're legislative or litigation related. About 30 states altogether addressing this in one way or another. Well, there's a concept called collateral estoppel. And so we're going to get a little civics this morning, some law school stuff coming out of our broadcast. Collateral estoppel basically says, it's issue preclusion. It basically says this, it's a doctrine that prevents a person from relitigating an issue. Basically says that once a court has decided an issue or a fact of law, something about a particular contest that's necessary to its judgment, that decision, that ultimate judgment precludes, it prevents a relitigation of the issue in another lawsuit, in a different cause of action, involving the initial parties to that initial case. That sounds like a lot. That is a lot to consume. Basically, it says if you litigated the issue already, it's come to judgment. You can't relitigate it in another forum, the same facts, the same parties involved. Now, whether or not collateral estoppel, that civics concept, that legal concept that, again, lawyers in first and second year of law school are schooled on, whether that would apply with respect to the Colorado case, plainly litigated in Colorado, a judgment entered there, question whether or not that particular judgment coming out of Colorado would then preclude in other states like litigation from going ahead based upon the same facts, presumably also the same facts presented in the trial in Colorado, same parties, presumably Donald Trump and others, whether that would have the impact, collateral estoppel, of preventing other states from going in other directions, whether the concept would prevent the relitigation of that issue in other states that may take up the similar issue. Many, many interesting things coming out of this. Again, the decision by the federal Supreme Court just yesterday to undertake this case is huge, not only with respect to American democracy, the republic, but plainly the election coming up in 2024. As we begin to think about other cases coming up, and before we do that, let's also take some callers. Appreciate many callers calling this morning. Thank you so much for that. Let's begin with Dick. Dick from Madison. Dick, you've been waiting on the line for a while. Your comment or question this morning about our discussion on our Saturday morning broadcast.
Well, just this. I agree totally with you. They're going to opt out and some double talk about we feel like we're going to be tipping the scale or standing on it, and they're going to opt out. But if they shouldn't, I certainly hope Clarence Thomas would have the decency to refuse himself from it. Now, the next thing I want to bring up, I brought up during the week to Matt Flynn. How about if the Supreme Court ruled that we go totally along with what Mr. Trump himself in his own words said about it? When he was campaigning in 2016, he constantly railed on Hillary Clinton not being, you shouldn't even be a candidate because she was in investigation, and it would just be a circus if she got elected. It'd be nothing but litigation, on and on and on he went. Never mind, she was not indicted with anything, to my knowledge. But my question is, you know, why not just drive that right down his throat? You yourself, sir, said you shouldn't be on the you shouldn't be on the ballot.
Right, right. And those kinds of things, Dick, that you raise initially about the recusal issue, that's already come up, right? There are an awful lot of calls out there for Clarence Thomas based upon the engagement of his wife in matters related to January 6th. And we know what that's all about. An awful lot of people who say, as do you, that Clarence Thomas should recuse himself. I agree with you that justices and judges who have a partner, a spouse, who are involved in the very issues that are in front of them should not be deciding those cases. Point well taken. Unlikely Clarence Thomas will agree with you and me and will recuse himself. We'll probably have a full court deciding this case. On the other issue, again, the kind of thing that just raised about history, those are the kinds of things that can be raised in argument before the court, presumably be part of the presentation by those defending the Colorado Supreme Court. Plainly taken on by those who are representing the former president himself. All of that, a possible presentation to the Supreme Court, since it has not, Dick, as you've implicitly suggested, has not narrowed this scope of its review at all and given parties free rein to present to them, at least in their briefs and presumably at oral argument as well, whatever it is they want to argue about in support of or in opposition to what the Colorado Supreme Court has said. So, Dick, thank you very much for the call, the comment. Much appreciated this morning. Let's go to Steve in La Crosse. Steve, also appreciate your being a part of our discussion this morning.
Morning.
Steve, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, I was just wondering, as far as a write-in ballot, if he can't be on the ballot, can people just write him in?
Good question, right? Right. And so obviously if the Supreme Court says that the Colorado decision stays in place, he has not formally appeared on the printed ballot. I will tell you that I am not a scholar. I'm not divested heavily in the intellectual question that you raised, which is whether or not what the write-in rules are in Colorado. Presumably, just like in Wisconsin, Colorado does have that option. And my speculation, which we would need to confirm, is that voters there would be able to write him in and probably would do that in great numbers, I would suspect. Great question about process and procedure, right?
Yeah, that's about it. That's all I was just wondering.
All right, very good, Steve. We'll look at that more and get back to you on that as well. Thank you for the comment or question from all of you, including Steve, your good question about what happens next in Colorado for write-in voters as well. Let's go to Lou in Cudahy. Lou, thank you once again for being with us this morning.
This whole conversation, this whole topic is all about why it's dangerous to have activist judges in positions like this. The end result will be to deny all the voters out there, probably millions, the access to vote for the candidate of their choice, namely Donald Trump, in both Colorado and the state of Maine. This is why democracy must be defended and this decision by these judges put down. This is why democracy will fail, and this is what the Democrats want. They want this to come to an end so that you deny people access to the Constitution and the right to vote for the candidate of their choice. That is obscene.
And Lou, you should know that already, and we anticipate that probably in the briefs, the oral argument, those folks who are going to be attacking and challenging the decision by the Colorado Supreme Court, they're going to be articulating just that, right? They're going to be saying, again, in oral argument to the Supreme Court, written argument as well, that if you keep this in place, you will be basically disenfranchising huge numbers of people. Appreciate the comment, Lou, this morning, as always. When we come back, more phone calls from all of you, comments about what's going on in America, January 6, 2024.
On the day that you were born, the angels got together and decided to create a dream come true. So they sprinkled moon dust in your hair and gold.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Homeownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weikert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We are back here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for joining me once again. Talking about this case entitled Trump versus Anderson. That's the civil case pending now before the United States Supreme Court on whether or not the Colorado Supreme Court's decision to prevent Donald Trump from being on the Republican primary ballot in that state will hold. Many, many issues, intricate, overlapping, many issues, legal, factual, presumably going to be argued, as some of the callers have already indicated, before the Supreme Court, coming up for oral argument in just 1 month from now, February 8th, presumably the Supreme Court anticipating making a decision very shortly after that, because once again, as we've talked about before, one of the major issues in 2024 is going to be timing. All this happening, of course, while campaigns are going on, elections, polling, voting going on here in the state of Wisconsin, in Colorado, in other states around the union. Delighted to have a lot of phone callers this morning. Let's go to Gene, who you've been on the line for a while. Gene, your comment, your question, your inquiry of me about any of the matters we've chatted about this morning. Glad to have you with us, Gene.
So I want to quick say thank you so much. I've attended all the sessions here. You are a gift to the state of Wisconsin. Thank you and keep up the great work, you and Anya. And I just wanted to say that thank you for discussing this issue. I was watching the entire process. I had different TVs on watching different stations. And I watched the entire speech Donald Trump gave. And when he emitted the blood-curdling call, going to the Capitol, I mean, I cannot get that out of my head. And we're going to expect, in the way he talked to that crowd, I just couldn't believe it. And I watched with my own eyes, and I was watching the coverage of all of the reporters that were hiding behind desks that were in there to cover what was going on. That was an assault. That was a crime. And I hope, in my opinion, that the Supreme Court lets this stand because somebody in the legal profession, the law, has to protect the people of the United States of America. Thank you so much for your show. We're so lucky to have you, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
Gene, thank you not only for your very, very generous comments about this broadcast, but also your comments about the substance. Again, we witnessed all this happening on January 6th. You can go back and look once again at what happened on that day. And I think all of us who are reasonable, rational people would agree that the future of America depends upon the administration of justice, the delivery of things that are based upon law and facts. That's what this case is all about. To your very important point, Gene, not only the things that you saw, that you experienced, admittedly a couple thousand miles away perhaps from Washington, D.C., other places around our nation, we all watched that. The reality is that much of that is codified in the decision by the Colorado Supreme Court. It's a very compelling opinion. It is not political. It's not partisan. But it says with great specificity that the lower court, the evidence presented, it's all the things, Gene, that you just described. Those are described in that opinion. And so the question about whether or not the Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court, is going to uphold the Colorado Supreme Court is, I would offer, related to, but different from whether or not there is integrity and there's a basis for the Colorado Supreme Court to find that indeed an insurrection took place. My own view, I suspect it is that of many others, not everyone, plainly, but many others, that indeed the Colorado Supreme Court got it right on the facts, got it right on the application of that insurrection language to those facts. Whether the United States Supreme Court agrees with that, whether they find some other avenue, procedural or jurisdictional, to decide the case, we will remain to that will remain to be seen, and we will witness that as we go forward. But again, Gene, thank you so much for your comment here this morning on our broadcast. Let's go to Joe, calling in from Madison. Joe, delighted to have you with us this morning as well.
I just wanted to respond and to elaborate on some things that you've said. Number one, I wanted to respond to Lou, who called, and I'm glad he called. I think he articulates the frustrations that many people feel, but I would point out to him that the Constitution is quite clear about having restrictions on who you can vote for, and you don't have free access to vote for whomever you want. I might like to have Taylor Swift as a president, but guess what? She's only 35. I might like to have President Obama run for a third term. Guess what? The Constitution says only two terms. I might want to have Arnold Schwarzenegger, success story. Nope, he's not native born. So in the same way, this 14th Amendment, the third section, outlines within the Constitution another restriction on who can run for office. And we're going through this discussion. There are two points that I hear often that express some frustration that people on the right may have. Two things. First off, there is a complaint that Donald Trump in this situation has not received due process. And the second is that Donald Trump has not been convicted of insurrection. My understanding is that the due process is the evidentiary hearing and the bench trial that the lower court had. And it's also my understanding that he needn't be convicted of insurrection because this was not a criminal trial. This was a civil trial simply to find out, does he meet the qualifications? Not is he headed toward jail? It's merely, does he meet the qualifications to run for president? In the same way, you could ask the question of Taylor Swift or Arnold Schwarzenegger. So could you respond to those things, due process, and did Trump have to be convicted of insurrection in order for this situation to go forward? Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, Jim.
Joe, thank you so very much for those good, always good comments and observations. And yes, indeed, if there is any concept in our country that encapsulates, that illustrates due process, it's trials, right? Where you have an opportunity not only to hear witnesses, to confront your accusers, to present evidence. It is oral evidence, it's written evidence. That is due process at its highest level. It's difficult to imagine anything that is beyond that in terms of conveying due process in our system. That is precisely, Joe, as you just said, that's what the trial court did. And that, again, is why the Colorado Supreme Court, in painstaking detail, looked at all of that due process afforded Donald Trump in Colorado and said it is supported by the law. It's supported by the facts presented in that due process presentation. So absolutely, very little to that argument. Although, once again, will it be raised before the Supreme Court? Sure it will be. And as I indicated before, there will be an attack on evidentiary rulings, other things suggesting that it was not, in fact, the perfect trial. The law, of course, is you're not entitled to a perfect trial. You're entitled to a fair trial. That's what he got. Also, as to the conviction issue, absolutely. A lot of arguments about whether or not a conviction is necessary. My own view, not necessary, but questions about whether or not what specific entity should decide that, very important going forward. Again, an issue to be presented to the federal Supreme Court. All of this a part of the review to be conducted by that high court. When we come back, we're going to entertain more comments and questions from callers and talk more in 2024 about other cases, other matters pending in the wake of January 6th. Thank you so much, and stay with us for the next hour.
Find the one who loves me. What I feel is come and gone.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.